So now, what we usually do is we take one verse from this Brahma Samhita and we discuss it. And we haven't been for a while we read through from the beginning to the end. And after that, we just sort of more made a free-form discussion. And I was wondering, either of you, please use the microphone. You can each take one so that you have one to speak. But as you read through this morning through the English, then was there anything that you had any questions about, or that you had any comments about, or that jumped out at you, or anything?
Something important, but it said three Vedas, and I was like, isn't it four Vedas?
The three Vedas are the Rig, Sama, and Yajur, and the Atharva is the fourth Veda.
Okay.
I think that's the three that it's referring to. So, Krishna also in Bhagavad Gita sometimes refers to the three Vedas. For example, when he says, Tri vidyamang somapak puta papa yagyair ishtvair swargating prartayante te punyamasadya surendra lokam ashnanti divyan divideva bhogan. So he's talking about the three Vedas, those who follow the three Vedas and they make performances of sacrifice so that they can drink the soma beverage. They do attain to the moon planet where they enjoy heavenly delights. But then in the next verse he says, Tangte buktva svargalokang vishalam kshine punye martyalokang vishanti evang trai dharma anuprapanna gata gata kama kama labhanti. That after the stock of pious activities is used up, then they again have to return to this, after enjoying great enjoyment in the heavenly planets, they again return to this world of death. And in this way, those who follow the three Vedas, Trayi Dharma, the three Dharmas, or whatever, Ivang Trayi Dharma Anuprapana, they return again and again, Gata Gata Kama Kama Labhanti. Those who try to satisfy material desires, they have to keep returning again and again. So, and then the next verse he says, but those who worship me, ananyas chintayanto mang yejanak paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham, for them I supply what they need, and I supply whatever they lack, and I carry whatever they have by my merciful protection. So he's recommending in the ninth chapter that we all worship him. But the three Vedas, I don't know why the Atharva Veda is set aside separately as a fourth Veda. It may be later. I heard that it deals a lot with... It has medicine. I think Yajurveda has most of the Ayurvedic. I'm not sure about that. But it has other kind of supplement, like spells, incantations, black magic, and but it has all different things. I don't know either. I don't really know either. It's something we could easily look up on, Wikipedia or something like that.
The other question when you look at Ishopanishad or just general Bhagavatam, it always says that Brahma was born out of his navel, Lord Vishnu's navel, and here it says out of his right limb. So I was taken aback. I mean, in one of the verses it says...
Yeah.
He was born from his right limb, and I was like, in the past when I once had this question wherein they said that Parikshit Maharaj, I've read different versions of Srimad Bhagavatam, and some of them they actually say that he was actually hearing to Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he listened to it for 7 days, and then some versions it says he was actually afraid, and he actually locked himself in a palace, and I was like, that sounds completely...
Sorry, the second one was?
This was actually not one translation from Srila Prabhupada, but it was some Srimad Bhagavatam book I got off somewhere, some library. And it said that actually Parikshit Maharaj was actually afraid and locked himself. I mean, it sounds blasphemous, but I'm just saying that I read, and I was like, how can the scriptures say completely different things? Like,
yeah.
Which one is correct? And then one of my Guru Maharaj is in Hyderabad was saying that there is something called as kalpa bheda, like in every kalpa things happen slightly differently, and I was like, okay, that could make sense. I mean, I could wrap my head around that.
Yeah, well, that's true too.
But this one was, I was like, this sounds completely different, so I wasn't sure. I mean, did I misinterpret it, or was it just...
Yeah, okay, well, there's several things going on here. You know, one thing is that it's true that in, for example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you may hear different sages and devotees are recounting stories of different avatars, and sometimes they recount them differently. For example, sometimes they talk about Vraha, the boar incarnation, as white color, and sometimes they talk about him as red color. And what's going on is that these things happen over and over again. Every four yugas, you know, there's a whole complete... Well, the Manvantars, even within one day of Brahma, one day of Brahma is 1,000 times the four yugas. So the four yugas taken together is one kalpa. And then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sahasra yuga paryantam maharyad brahmano vidu ratring yuga sahasrantam teho ratri vidojanaha. So the lifetime of Lord Brahma, each daytime of Lord Brahma is 1,000 of these maha yugas. And then his night also is for the same duration that he sleeps at night. So within each of these daytimes of Lord Brahma, there's, I think, 78 manus or something like that. Actually, don't quote me on the number. So the manus live for a very long time, but then even within the different cycle of four yugas is also a very long time. I mean, way beyond our mundane historians, they think, oh, humans were only around as Homo sapiens for, you know, 40,000, 50,000 years or something. But actually, we know that Lord Rama was on the earth in the Treta Yuga some million years ago. And, you know, some of the things we read about in Srimad Bhagavatam come from Satya Yuga, which was, you know, 3-4 million years ago, whatever. So then Kali Yuga lasts for another 427,000 years, a total of 432,000 years, and then there'll be another Satya Yuga again. So these things last for a long time, and during each of these cycles, there are these avatars. That Krishna, he plays the same roles, but a little differently, you know, just like a jazz musician may play the same tune, but maybe he improvises a little bit. So sometimes things happen a little bit differently, and nevertheless, he's... you know, like he'll be white sometimes or red sometimes or different things will happen. And this explains these pastimes are transcendental pastimes. They're not arranged necessarily chronologically. They're being told in order to express the important philosophical idea that's being expressed at the time and the mood, the right mood. So when Shukadev Goswami says something... or when Maitreya Muni or Narada Muni or one of the other reciters, Sutta Goswami, they're not concerned with creating a chronological timeline the way mundane historians are trying to figure out a certain kind of sort of material chain of events, but rather they're trying to impart pure devotional service to the listeners. So that's what you heard is correct, that there are, and this is told by our acharyas, and there's a book called Laghu Bhagavatamrita, written by Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who's Lord Chaitanya's direct disciple. And in there he explains the different avatars very carefully, very directly, and how they were different in each age. And he explains that these things can be compiled from the Srimad Bhagavatam if you understand correctly that they're coming from different ages. So that's one thing, that we don't have to concern ourselves too much with these kinds of inconsistencies. However, there's also such a thing as, you know, people, you know, like Krishna told Arjuna that in the course of time, the parampara was broken, and the science of yoga that Krishna was instructing, the Bhagavad Gita science, was lost. And that chain of parampara can be broken when people who try to be creative come up with different interpretations and different ideas and then present them as if they were authoritative. It sounds to me like the Srimad Bhagavatam that you read that said that Parikshit Maharaj was frightened and locked himself in a room. I've never heard that story, so it may very well be that it was just something that somebody imagined, some non-enlightened person imagined and created. And there are, even within the scriptures, there are interpolations. That is, there are things some Brahmin somewhere, you know, decided to write, compose some composition and insert it. And there are, you know, there are different recensions of the different Puranas and the Mahabharata. You know, there are many different versions, even of the Sanskrit Mahabharata. There are different versions. Some of them contain some pastimes, and some of them don't contain those, but contain others. And the pure devotees can tell us, you know, what stories. Like Lord Chaitanya said, that the Srimad Bhagavatam is spotless, but that were one or two things that the pure devotees don't accept, involving Moksha Lila and some other things. It's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is described in other Puranas as having a certain number of verses, and it can be, at any rate, it's the Srimad Bhagavatam has been accepted in its present form that we have it by Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, our Acharyas, and so you know, we can understand that it's pure. There are some things. There's some story. I forget where. In one Purana, there's a story that some people tell that, you know, Krishna was from a black hair and Balaram was from a white hair of Lord Brahma or something like that, or of Mahavishnu. And these, you know, Srila Prabhupada has written in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the purport that these are simply concocted stories that aren't part of Parampara. Now, you see, in Srimad Bhagavatam itself, at some point someone is saying one thing about Vraha, and, you know, sometimes he's red and sometimes he's white. Similarly, in Brahma Samhita, in the same Brahma Samhita, it's only 62 verses, same chapter even, we have a description of Lord Brahma being born on the lotus, coming out of the lotus, seeing nothing but gloom in all directions, and then being enlightened by, being initiated by Saraswati, to chant this Gayatri mantra, which gives him this realization of Krishna, that then he then composes this hymn. And then it's talking about how Vishnu creates Brahma from his left limb and his right limb, and Lord Shiva, Shambhu, from the space between his two eyebrows. And so we can understand that these personalities, like Brahma and Shiva, they're you know, multidimensional personalities. They're more complicated than just, you know, their history is more complicated than just that of a human being. And they actually have, you know, Brahma is the guna avatar of the mode of passion, just as Shiva is the guna avatar of the mode of ignorance. And as you heard elsewhere in the Brahma Samhita, you know, Brahma has his planet way up at the top of the universe, which is practically all spiritual, and then Shiva has a planet higher than that, and so these personalities exist in every universe. There's a different Brahma, and just how he's created, or the personality of Brahma is created, and how he's born, maybe in different, you know, understood in terms of, you know, It requires a broad intelligence to be able to comprehend how he can be born in two different ways. And not necessarily that it happened at two different kalpas. It may be that this is, you know, just two different descriptions. What kind of a lotus flower is this, that the whole universe is contained within the stem of that lotus, and yet it's growing within the universe out of the navel pit of Mahavishnu. So it's not, if we try to apply our ordinary kind of analytical scientific intelligence or whatever, it won't compute, because it's a bigger kind of knowledge. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say about this mundane scientists, you know, what will they understand with their little puppy brains, you know? You know, Lord Brahma's intelligence, he knows everything that's going on in the whole universe, from every insect to everything, to Lord Indra, you know, he knows all the things that are going on. And to have that kind of intelligence, you have to be able to operate in you know, not strictly linear ways. You know, it's a broader kind of knowledge. So the understanding of how Mahavishnu creates Brahma from his left limb and Vishnu from his right limb, or did I get it backwards, and Shiva from this. But here it is, Mahavishnu, and then he's creating Vishnu. You know, who is this Vishnu that he's creating from his right limb? But it's describing the creation of the three gunas and their avatars, because the modes of material energy have to be set in motion in the beginning of the creation of the universe. Everything in the material universe is working under these three modes, and that's how it goes. And they work by, sometimes one becomes more prominent than the other two, and they're competing like that. And because of their competition of between these three qualities, then all the interactions of the universe are taking place, and history happens under the influence of time, and that and it's all being directed by Krishna through his agents, both directly and indirectly. So I hope that is a satisfying answer. Use the microphone so they can hear you on the internet.
No, I completely agree that, I mean, after a point, devotional service is pretty much like, for instance, I remember when I was really young, I mean, I started attending classes once I was like probably 9 years in Hyderabad, and we used to have this Bhagavad Gita classes. And I guess I always questioned everything and anything that came my way. But the thing which struck me the most is we'd study about the nuclear model and stuff like that, and all those theories are, you know, we take them blindly, like, you know, no one has seen the atom, for crying out loud, but you assume and you think, okay, someone said it and it kind of makes sense, and you take it by word of mouth. And when you could place so much trust in what a scientist could say, it shouldn't be that difficult to actually pay attention to some great devotee who has spent years and years of his life just rendering transcendental service to Lord Krishna and just being a great devotee. And that kind of made sense. So, of course, yes, I don't think everything can be understood by pure intellect. I completely agree to that aspect of what you said.
It's a similar process.
It's more what you feel than what you actually can see or touch. Or it's just, you feel happiness when you hear to bhajan. And how do you explain that? It's just the eternal nature of the spirit is being happy. And so you feel happy, and it kind of resonated. So yes, I wasn't trying to analyze. I was just trying to understand. That's all.
And it's not wrong to. You should try to analyze and understand, and you should never stop. And you know, when we're little kids and we learn something about the atomic model, you know, we just accept what we're told to accept what we hear. And then when we become graduate students and we get involved in quantum theory and stuff, we realize it's a lot more complicated than that. And we learn about the bigger picture and why these different models don't quite work, and why they're trying to create, and how they're trying to find new models to adjust to explain everything. But that process is a process of, you know, human beings, you know, trying to sort of build knowledge from the ground up. It's, you know, it's ascending knowledge, that we're seeing the world through our senses, and we're making experiments or making different discrete parts of, you know, and then trying to build a model that explains everything. And it has some utility to do it that way. But to understand the pastimes of Krishna, for that we have to hear it from someone who actually has realization of the pastimes of Krishna. And that's a descending process. And that's explained in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, I first instructed this science to Sun God Vivasvan, then he instructed it to Manu, and Manu instructed it to Ikshvaku, and in this way, by parampara, the saintly kings understood it. So it's not exactly an intellectual process, Srila Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the purport, that a disciple has to please the spiritual master by becoming humble and submissive and rendering service and changing his heart, actually, to a different kind of, you know, to be. Like it says in this book, that those whose eyes are tinged with the salve of love, they can see Krishna. So that change also has to take place, that one has to actually acquire those qualities of character that make one receptive to be able to understand this knowledge. But make no mistake, it really is knowledge, and those who have it, it's a science. Prabhupada would always say that. Those who have it, they can recognize each other, they can converse amongst each other, and you know, just the same way that the nuclear physicists who have their PhDs and they're at the top of their field, they can talk to each other and recognize one another as great experts, so can the Mahatmas, and they can understand what they're talking about. So let's read that verse about that before we go on to the next part of our thing. Let's read that verse about how he created Vishnu from his left limb, and we'll find it. It's in the first 20 verses. So, let's see. He's the creator of thousands of individual souls. I haven't got there yet. I haven't found it yet. Yeah, it's page 29. Did you find it, Avinash?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's read the whole thing and read the purport. These purports and this whole description, this whole book by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this is like a, you know, more of a graduate level book, and it's also very technical. It uses very technical language, so it's dense. You know, you have to go like one sentence at a time and say, what does that mean? And we need to sit with a dictionary next to us too. I was thinking of looking up some of these words like primeval and tumuli and stuff like that. The same Mahavishnu created Vishnu from his left limb, Brahma, the first progenitor of beings, from his right limb, and from the space between his two eyebrows, Shambhu, the divine masculine manifested halo. It's possible that he can create Brahma from his right limb by making him appear on a lotus flower. This is the kind of thing that can be done. Let's see. Purport by His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. The divine Purusha, lying in the ocean of milk, the same who is the regulator of all individual souls, is Sri Vishnu, and Hiranyagarbha, the seminal principle, the portion of the Supreme Lord, is the prime progenitor who is different from the four-faced Brahma. This same Hiranyagarbha is the principle of seminal creating energy of every Brahma belonging to each of the infinity of universes. The divine masculine manifested halo, Shambhu, is the plenary manifestation, that means complete, full, of his prototype Shambhu, the same as the primary divine masculine generative symbol Shambhu, whose nature has already been described. So there's a prototype Brahma or Hiranyagarbha principle, and there's a prototype Shambhu that are different from the specific ones that are in this universe. Vishnu is the integral subjective portion of Mahavishnu. Hence, he is the great lord of all the other lords. The progenitor Brahma and Shambhu are the dislocated portions of Mahavishnu. Hence, they are gods with delegated functions. His own. Therefore, we say that out of the ten offenses to chanting Hare Krishna, one of them is to think that names of other gods like Brahma or Shiva even are equal to or independent of Vishnu, because actually they have delegated functions. They're, you know, guna avatars. They're engaged in the creation and destruction of the world, whereas Vishnu himself there's a Vishnu also who's a guna avatar who's engaged in maintenance of the material world, but there's also a Vishnu who exists eternally in the spiritual world and who is the absolute truth, and he's a different nature, and his name has its own special quality. Hence, he is the great lord of all the other lords. The progenitor, Brahma and Shambhu, are dislocated portions of Mahavishnu. Hence, they are gods with delegated functions. His own potency being on the left side of Godhead, Vishnu appears in the left limb of Mahavishnu from the unalloyed essence of his spiritual chit potency. Vishnu, who is Godhead himself, is the inner guiding oversoul of every individual soul. He is the personality of Godhead described in the Vedas as being of the measure of a thumb. He is nourisher. The Karmis, elevationists, worship him as Narayana, the Lord of sacrifices, and the yogis desire to merge their identities in him as Paramatma by the process of their meditative trance. So as I understand it, this Vishnu, who is described in the Vedas as the size of the thumb, who is the inner guiding oversoul, or Paramatma, is the Vishnu that's being created from the left limb. And Brahma, created from the right limb, is the prototype Brahma, known as Hiranyagarbha. Is the prime progenitor, who's different from the four-faced Brahma, and then he's the principle of seminal creating energy of every Brahma belonging to each of the infinity of universes. So there's different Brahmas in different universes, and the way that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a description. Actually, this there's a pastime within Srimad Bhagavatam too, but in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a description how Lord Brahma comes to Dwarka and he comes to get an audience with Krishna in Dwarka while Krishna's on earth. You know, there's a story of how Brahma takes the cows and the cowherd boys, the calves and the cowherd boys, and hides them, and then Krishna manifests himself as calves and cowherd boys, and then when Brahma comes back, he sees that Krishna has all these cows and cowherd boys. Still, he's bewildered. And then all the cows and calves, they turn into four-armed Narayanas. And, you know, Brahma is just totally... And they all start circumambulating Krishna. And Brahma offers these wonderful prayers in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. So anyway, here later, he comes back into Dwarka to get an audience with Krishna. And he comes to the door of the palace, and or to the inner chamber in the palace, and he says, I want an audience with Krishna. And the doorkeeper says, well, who shall I say is calling? And he says, but it's me, I'm Lord Brahma, the four-faced, you know, I'm Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe. So the doorkeeper goes in, and he comes back, and he says, my Lord Krishna wants to know which Brahma. So he says, what, which Brahma? I'm four-faced Brahma, the original creator, the lord of the whole universe. So then he comes in and he sees that there in attendance of Krishna, there are many other Brahmas. Some of them have five heads or 10 heads or 1,000 heads. And they're offering obeisances to Krishna and going back to their own different universes. So the Brahma that's created from the right limb of Mahavishnu is the seminal original principle of Brahma that creates all the Brahmas in all the different universes. That's my best understanding of what I read, but it's difficult language to read and I'm not sure I've understood correctly. What do you say, Ramananda Sakka? Do you have any thoughts about it? Or do you have any comments or anything before we go on to, we're going to read the Namashtakam of Rupa Goswami.